DW Africa Link.
Smart financing isn't just about numbers. It's about unlocking Africa's full potential. In a world of shifting markets and rising opportunities, the right financial strategies can fuel sustainable growth, drive innovation, and build resilient economies across the continent. That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that is dedicated to bringing you the stories that matter from Africa, stories that are often overlooked but are crucial to understanding the continent's development.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
In this exclusive conversation with Dr. Samuel Mayimbo, Vice President, Budget Performance Review and Strategic Planning of the World Bank and candidate for President of the African Development Bank, AFDB, we explore how smarter investments, policy reforms, and global partnerships can transform Africa's future. Dr. Mayimbo's bold vision as he campaigns for the presidency of the African Development Bank could be a beacon of hope for the continent. Thank you so much for joining us here, Dr. Samuel Mayimbo, and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great. Let's go directly to your current position. How do you ensure that Africa remains a strategic priority in terms of global resource allocation?
One of the things, the best way in which we can do this is for Africans themselves, ourselves, to take charge and define our own destiny. In an environment where concessional financing has been declining, the best way to make sure that we diversify our sources of financing is to look inward, to look at the fact that we've got 60% of the world's arable land. We're still importing $50 billion worth of food. Well, let's start buying it from ourselves. Let's reduce the trade borders that block our intercontinental trade. That's the way we make sure that we are highly relevant. And keep in mind, this is not just for Africans. If you think about our energy and power sources, we have the capacity to export power in leaps and bounds. So as challenging as the current environment is, I remain optimistic about our future.
But this discussion has been ongoing for years, Dr. Mayimbo, talking about even Africa trading amongst themselves. What seemed to be the challenge?
For years, we've talked about development. We've talked about intercontinental trade. We've signed agreements that have 10-year implementation horizons. What has changed is the global environment. We no longer have 10 years. The tariffs that we see going up globally, they're going up today. So what I expect is that this crisis will be a great opportunity for African governments, together with the African Development Bank, the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement Secretariat, and the African Union, to say now is the time to proceed with implementation. And the reality is, as I have gone around the continent campaigning for my current position, I have been encouraged by the fact that I think we have a generation of leaders today who know exactly what they want for their continent. They are clear-eyed about the ambitions they have set for themselves. And what they're looking for is just support financially, operationally, technically, to get the job done.
Now, one day, the world, rather, including Africa, obviously, woke up and President Donald Trump was talking about cutting aid. And USAID was one of the biggest organizations that was also assisting Africa in different aspects. We're talking of health. We're talking of even education. Now, how then is the World Bank evolving its support for Africa to move beyond this aid dependency?
One thing to keep in mind, and certainly speaking as a Zambian who grew up there in the 1980s, who went through the HIV/AIDS epidemic, losing friends and family, I will always be grateful for the support that American aid has provided, especially through PEPFAR. There's been a tremendous amount of good work that has been done. That said, decisions have been made. And I think it's important to keep in mind that this decision, as difficult as it is a trend that we have seen over the last 5, 10 years, where concessional financing has been declining. And therefore, it is incumbent upon multilateral institutions, the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and African governments ourselves, to rethink the current development model. The aid to debt model is not working on the continent. It's too expensive for donor countries. It's too expensive for recipient countries in terms of some of the debt burdens we currently carry. So I'm encouraged by the fact we're transitioning to a model that is private sector led.
And the world is increasingly embracing AI, and the excitement is extremely high, Dr. Mayimbo. You've seen that even, I know, on social media platforms, people are going crazy. People are creating a lot of images, some that are not real. People are even composing songs through AI. Now, how do you see artificial intelligence transforming daily life in African countries, particularly in underserved communities?
I am both excited and concerned about the potential for AI and technology in Africa as a whole. Excited because it is the fastest way in which we can leapfrog some of the challenges that other countries have faced as they've developed their countries. We saw this in telecoms. We didn't have to go through the whole landline experience. We can do the same with technology. And I think its ability to cross borders faster, and our young people are doing it. They're collaborating on fantastic projects with their colleagues on the opposite side of the continent. So to that extent, I'm very excited. My concern is in twofold. First, I think we're not investing in the core infrastructure fast enough to make sure that we remain competitive in an AI development world. We have to increase our investment in energy. We have to increase our investment in core infrastructure, cable technology. That's work in progress. The other is content. Most of us are fascinated by large language models that allow us to get answers in a couple of seconds. But the reality is those large language models do not include the beautiful Shona language. They do not include the Tonga language, right? And so as long as we are not investing in indigenous languages and culture, our children will grow up in a world where they are devoid of this rich cultural heritage that we've been blessed with.
And I'm worried about my job, Dr. Mayimbo. One day, maybe DVC will pick up and say, we are using robots, but we just hope that will not happen. I mean, human touch, you know, this human thing can never be replaced. But I'm also just wondering what policies you think African governments can adopt to ensure that AI benefits are actually inclusive. As you mentioned, I mean, our children should not grow up just feeling like they're robots. So, and also, it's not just for the tech elite.
Absolutely. You know, I've always been fascinated by what happens in an industry when technology comes in, when vehicles were invented, when airlines were invented, when the cable, when phones, we continue to have this conversation. And I've come to the firm belief, especially where AI and technology is concerned, that technology will not replace human beings. People using technology will replace the jobs of people who are not using technology, right? And so we enrich our jobs with technology. We expand the definition of what we can do. The key is to make sure that the vast majority of our populations are going up the value chain of employment. And this is what makes education fundamental in this environment. We can no longer afford to be sending our kids to spend years learning about history and geography. They must be learning about coding and investment and rates of return, because the quality of jobs is going to change and we must be prepared for that. So as a matter of policy at the African Development Bank, I know it's been well known as an infrastructure bank for many years, but I'm going to take a holistic approach to development that takes into account that large-scale job creation requires us to invest in education, invest in health, and all of these fundamental enablers of development. Now, it doesn't mean everything has to be done by the African Development Bank, but it does mean we have to partner with those who are working in education, partner with those who are working in health, to make sure that we broaden the definition of job creation. Hey, one of the challenges we have in development in Africa is not the lack of good projects. We've got many good projects, but oftentimes they take place in isolation. Oftentimes they're not at a scale that will make a lasting difference. And that's what I hope to change, that we need to take a comprehensive approach to development. It's education, it's health, it's vocational training, it's partnerships with the private sector. It's making sure that we're working hand in hand with the kids. And when they're ready to go into entrepreneurship, we've got the financing vehicles to back them up.
Right. I love your positivity. You're already talking as if you are the president of AFDB. But anyway, anyone.
Life is too short.
Any candidate that I interview, they never lose. So we hope that comes true as well for you. But do you believe Africa is ready to regulate AI effectively? Let's be honest amongst ourselves as Zimbabwean sister and a Zambian mother.
Look, it's actually a good thing that we are not rushing to regulate. This is why telecoms took off so quickly in Africa. Digital payment systems took off fantastically in Africa because we were not ready. We were not rushing to regulate. So there were a lot of innovations like M-Pesa in Kenya grew much faster because it was able to do things that it would possibly not have been able to do in highly regulated markets. So the pace of regulation for me is a secondary issue. The pace of investment in tech, in infrastructure, in cable technology, in making sure that we've got internet access for the vast majority of people, that's what worries me. The fact that leapfrogging into AI requires tremendous storage capacity, right? The storage capacity and energy usage is significant. And as long as we're not building this capacity on the continent, it means that we will continue to be consumers in a fast evolving digital environment. Mm-hmm. Now, my approach at the African Development Bank is to acknowledge that not every country will be able to afford the levels of investment that we can have, which is why it's paramount. We reduce our borders. We think in terms of hubs. Djibouti receives the vast majority of undersea cable networks more than any other city that I've been to, right? So let's harness that. Let's connect it to the rest of the continent. Let's identify port infrastructure that allows us to build this storage capacity and build on that. We've got to share our infrastructure if we're going to emerge as a strong continental bloc.
And talking about energy, Dr. Maimbo, I hope that is also one of your biggest agenda as you step into that office as AFDB president, because that is one challenge also I've seen a lot of Africans encountering. You know, we are in the diaspora, and imagine your parents are in the villages there. You hardly can communicate with them. And in this day and age, this is the only way we can communicate. We don't have post offices anymore. We don't have postmen to go with the letters anymore. So I hope this is one of your first priority agendas to ensure that every village, every rural area in Africa at least has some form of energy.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more, because you and I have family and relatives who still have challenges with access to energy. It's unacceptable for me to sit here and have the luxury of talking about the different types of energy in an environment where people still don't have access. So access is a priority. And the good news is Africa has the capacity to generate enough energy to power every village. If you just think about hydro, right from the Aswan Dam, the Great Ethiopia Dam, the yet to be completed Inga Dam project, and of course the dam that we share in Kariba. Yeah. The reality is the power is there. What's lacking is smart investments in energy that connects this power into all of the different power pools. We've got a Southern African power pool that is not connected to the Eastern African power pool. Let's connect those power pools. Let's make an investment in energy. We simply cannot grow in the dark. That's fundamental, right? And so when you think about the basic ingredients of development, energy, infrastructure, investments in our young people, these are the same basic ingredients that developed the United States, developed Europe after World War II, fast developing Asia. It's the same formula in Africa. So let's just focus on implementation, focus on making sure that our governments who understand what needs to be done have the support to do it.
Now, let's go back to President Donald Trump, the U.S. tariffs and global trade. As someone who's been with the World Bank and someone who's also vying for this high office, just to find out from you, what impacts do you think those tariffs have on African exports and trade competitiveness?
When you have been in development for as long as I have been, you learn to focus on the long-term trends rather than the immediate news headlines. The discussions around tariffs are going to be ongoing for quite some time. As we speak, you'll hear it from the United States themselves, that they're in negotiations with various countries. It's premature to rush to judgment on the outcome of those negotiations. I will leave them to take place. What my focus will be is that as these discussions are going on between various countries and the United States, my focus is, what are the discussions taking place between African countries? What are the discussions taking place about the tariffs that prevent us from trading with each other more? Keep in mind that every single time an African country imports food, we are literally exporting capital to other continents. That's capital that Zimbabwe needs. That's capital Zambia needs. So let's buy from each other. Let's pour that capital into each other's enterprises. Because long term, that's where we go. Now, you and I come from an area where we have the shared proverb that when two elephants fight, it's the grass that suffers. I want to make sure I'm not that grass suffering at the moment.
Absolutely. But then also many countries, African countries rather, Dr. Maimbo, are drowning in debt and lack financial strategies for sustainability. Then what innovative financing strategies do you yourself, as the candidate for Africa Development Bank, advocate for?
Debt is certainly one of the key things we need to resolve quickly if we're going to grow significantly at pace. I have a three-point strategy when it comes to debt. The first is to use data to distinguish countries that are truly insolvent and require debt relief from the countries that have a solvency problem, have a liquidity problem. You and I have many friends who earn significantly higher incomes than we do, and yet they're broke in the middle of the month. They just need something to tide them over. Mm-hmm. Secondly, when it comes to the natural resource accounting for countries, I think we can do better. There are many countries we're treating as highly indebted, yet they're sitting on minerals, critical minerals, that have generational wealth. It's a matter of securitizing their sources of income and making them solvent today. So data is a big issue that we need to address. The second thing I want to focus on is revenue generation. Nothing gets you out of debt faster than increasing your income. And I think there are certain industries on the continent that can have the ability to do that, that we can lean into more aggressively than is currently the moment. Take the creative industry today. It is actually the second largest employer after agriculture in a country like Nigeria. South Africa is earning $300 million from the gaming industry. When you think about all of the sports venues that are hosting sporting-related events over the weekend, we can do much more to lean into that. But it's not just the creative industry. It's even our traditional sectors like mining, agriculture. The task is to accelerate the review and licensing processes so that we can get from investment to revenue in the shortest possible time. The final step on our debt strategy is to go back to our financial instruments. We need to give sovereigns the space to use debt as merely one tool of a broader range of financial instruments than we currently are. When a country is indebted, we stop giving them access to markets, we stop giving them access to equity opportunities, mezzanine finance. Let's go back to basics. Let's engage in blended finance options that makes it easier for countries to keep up with their payments. In the vast majority of African countries, it's not a debt problem. It's a debt repayment problem. And that's what I will be focusing on, easing that repayment cycle and process so that countries can go back to the business of investment and growth, because that's what takes us out of debt problems in the long term.
But I have a question on this debt issue, Dr. Maimbo. Sure. I'm just looking at how countries come to World Bank or IMF and say, oh, we need this certain amount of money, probably for education, for health and whatever. And the money is released. Are there any systems in place that people actually go back to these countries and see, at least check if this money is being used for what it was taken for, or it's just giving you the money and that's it, waiting for your money to be paid back?
Not at all. I have spent 18 years doing World Bank operations. I lived in Mozambique and covered 7 countries on the African continent. The whole process of lending, and one of the reasons why the World Bank often gets criticized for taking too long in approving World Bank projects, is because we are on the ground, we're going to countries, having discussions on what the money is going to be used for, how it's going to be paid. And actually, one of the key things people neglect is that the World Bank often doesn't give you money upfront. We actually pay you the money after you've invested. So we agree that it's going to be a real construction, and you go through the procurement process. As you're making those payments, you're presenting those payments to the bank for you to be reimbursed. I don't think the level of indebtedness is a result of the model that development partners are using. The challenge that comes in is that once the investments are made, we are not doing as great a job collectively, governments and multilateral institutions, to make sure that those investments are sustainable. We have made sure that they're being maintained well, and critically, not linking them enough to revenue-generating sources that expand the economy. Which is why, as a matter of policy at the African Development Bank, should I be elected, is that when we think about infrastructure projects, whether it's rail, road, pipeline, we're going to do it in the form of corridors. Along the lines of rail, along the road, we're going to have to think creatively to make sure that we're supporting the agricultural sector along that line of rail. We're supporting special economic zones. Because once you do that, that's the best way to make sure that whatever you borrow has generated enough revenue for you to repay.
Now, as we wrap up our discussion, I know, again, we would want to know more about your vision for the AFDB presidency. If elected head of the African Development Bank, you did mention some of your priorities, but I would want to hear from you your top three priorities in your first 100 days and what you would do differently from your predecessors to make AFDB more agile, transparent, and youth-focused, especially youth-focused, and not forgetting women. Thank you.
Absolutely. Look, the presidency of the African Development Bank is a relay race. Every president takes on the baton from their predecessor, runs as hard as they can under the circumstances that they find. The circumstances that I will find will be challenging, without a doubt. I intend to pick up from the incumbent and run as strong a race as I can. My priorities over the first 100 days include making sure that we have structures in place to get to hear from everybody on the continent, women, young people, underserved communities, fragile states. We've got to make sure that the institution of the African Development Bank is firing on all cylinders. Our financing, our staff, our institutional capacity, we're making decisions as quickly as we can. The second area is to make sure that we are supporting governments as best we can navigate a very complex, polarized environment. In that regard, a key priority is the African Development Fund. It's going through a replenishment cycle this year. On day one, I'm putting my mind and heart into that effort because it is critical. We have a sizable amount of concessional financing to support governments. But ultimately, the number one goal is to make sure we're growing this economy as quickly as we can. So setting up structures and systems within the African Development Bank that allows us to work stronger and faster with the private sector is a primary priority. And in that conversation, I will have a youth council that advises the president of the African Development Bank and its leadership on how best we can energize youth entrepreneurship, because that is the way we create as many jobs as we possibly can for the billion people that we have on our beautiful continent. When it comes to decision-making, because that's where we need to start, we have to have women in the decision-making structures at the African Development Bank. To be honest with you, I really don't like special initiatives for women, because what happens when you do that is they lose their seat at the decision-making table. So I want to make sure that my leadership team reflects and we have women represented there, so that when we're making core decisions, we are using the best part and the best power of our brain power. Women make excellent decisions. I find them much more rational and patient in dealing with complex issues. But beyond that, I want to make sure that structurally, when we're investing in our AFDB operations, women are at the heart and center, because the reality is, you and I know that when a village doesn't have electricity, when schools don't have books, it's our girls, it's our women who suffer the most. When we do not have clean energy for cooking, it's our women who get sick. And so every single operation that we will do at the African Development Bank will have a gender lens that takes care of the structural issues and biases that we have in our, you know, financing loan application systems. We need to review all of that. So that's the reason why I often say I don't like special initiatives for women. I like them as a top-up. I like them as extras. But we must make sure that the core business, decision-making, structural design of operations, the financing process, that has to reflect and make sure that women are taken care of.
Dr. Samuel Mayimbo, Vice President, Budget Performance Review and Strategic Planning, World Bank, and candidate for President of African Development Bank, AFDB, many thanks for joining us.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a vital part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We are committed to including your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. You can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple or wherever you get your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.